Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. We're back after our winter break and we've moved to Tuesday. Tuesday? What day? Yes, Tuesday. We're back. This week we dissect Daniel Stendel's open heart surgery. Kelly hoping to turn their dire results into Dyer's results. And there was a Glasgow grab from Christie, but Rangers walked away kings of Celtic Park for the first time since 2010. Plus, we'll be previewing the Scottish Cup as Bonnie and Clyde take centre stage and Steve Hislop, you know him, he played 8 times for Gillingham, will tell us all about his team, Broxburn Athletic, as they get ready to face St Mirren. I'm Andrew Slavin, and as ever, I'm joined by the most enthusiastic man in any room he's in. It's JJ Boole from The Telegraph.
Hello.
Enthusiastic as ever.
Well, I had to do it. He set me up.
And here with reasons to be cheerful, it's European football expert Kieran Canning.
Why am I cheerful?
Your cause.
Because I was going to say, if JJ is the most enthusiastic man in every room, am I now just a dour Scot to balance him out?
Well, you can change that. You can change that now. And for the first time ever on the Totally Scottish Football Show, it is actually totally Scottish because our new producer, Abby, has a passport that says birthplace Livingston.
And that's what we need, is it? We just the only Scottish. Get rid of the our real xenophobes. That's what we need to be.
The thing is, I think this is Brexit Britain in 2020.
Yeah.
JJ, get on board or get out.
Abby got on board as soon as she found out Livingston's stadium was basically the spaghetti had, the Tony Macaroni. There you go. JJ, a wee birdie told me that you've been speaking to someone who doesn't play football in Scotland, but is Scottish.
Are you talking about Andy Robertson?
Yeah.
I see. Oh, yes.
How is he? How's he doing?
Oh, this, to put this in context, me and Kieran were both working at the Spurs-Liverpool game the other day.
Did you meet up outside of the studio?
We did, yeah. We were talking football, work football.
And then the free buffet, it should be pointed out.
Yeah.
What sort of buffet was there?
A football buffet. And then and then at full time, Kieran went and did the press conferences with the managers, which is really fun. And
Were you just watching him this whole time?
Yeah.
And I went to the mix zone. Tucking into the football buffet and just watching Kieran work.
And I went to the mix zone and then Andy Robertson came out and we had a little chat with him for the dailies, the Mondays.
Oh, cool. What did he say?
He said some things about how he doesn't drink during the season at all, which is kind of obvious, but in the 2 weeks during the summer, he definitely
gets on
might. And I asked him...
I basically saying even if we do qualify for Euro 2020, Andy Robertson's just going to be blitzed the whole tournament.
Oh, man, I would pay to watch Andy Robertson spanned like playing against Israel. It'd be great. It can't be any worse than half the players have got. And I asked him if he thinks his game has changed since he got the captaincy at Scotland. And he says that sort of. Mm. Says he takes bits and pieces. He's not really like... close to being captain of Liverpool, but he's definitely changed the way he thinks about it when he's on the pitch. But yeah, that's all I've got for you.
That's interesting.
Not particularly fascinating. There you
go.
That's
okay.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
But it's been a really long time since we were last together. You know, Christmas and New Year's happened. So much has gone on. But we should catch up on everything that's happened. So we should really start with matters at the top of the table. Rangers won at Celtic Park for the first time since 2010. 2-1, thanks to Nikola Katic's 56th minute header.
Another good spell in the game for Rangers. Barisic asking the question again. Katic! He's done it! Cracking header! And Rangers hit the front again! They have the lead! Once more on this day of destiny in the title race.
Kieran, you were at this game.
I was, yes. Yeah, it was kind of a strange game to analyse. It's a bit like there was now been 3 Celtic Rangers games this season, and it seems to be as soon as one team seems to be getting on top, the other one scores. So Obviously there was League Cup final where Rangers dominated, had all the chances. Celtic ended up winning. The first half of this game more or less followed that pattern, like Rangers were far the better team. But again, just as Celtic were coming into it and getting on top, they missed the penalty, obviously. Rangers went up the park and scored. I think that was just the major difference of this game to the League Cup final, that Rangers had fewer chances but were probably still the better team and took them this time round. And it was interesting because we normally think of cup finals as people always say about cup finals, you know, they're there to win. It doesn't matter how you play as long as you win. Whereas actually Gerrard in the press conference, and there was a few Rangers players afterwards as well, they took so much from that League Cup final, even though they lost, so much confidence that they can beat Celtic.
Because the way they played, then
getting over the line and actually winning this game gives them even more confidence going into the second half of the season. I think it could really be the turning point in the title race, because going into this game, I probably, like many, thought that Rangers are really close now, but maybe Celtic are just going to get over the line. They had a 5-point advantage and Rangers have had a game in hand. But if Celtic had won that game, it goes to 8 points. You think realistically the title might be gone for Rangers. Now it's back in Rangers' hands. If they win their game in hand, they go ahead of Celtic. And interestingly, like, they had a really hard December in terms of the fixtures, whereas now coming back in after the Scottish Cup this weekend, like, 5 of Rangers' next 7 league games are at home, 5 of Celtic's next 7 are away. So there's a chance for Rangers to actually build up a bit of a lead.
And there was a bit of controversy after this game, because a lot of it's been spoken about already, but Ryan Christie has been banned for 2 games for grabbing Morelos by the balls. Deemed worthy of brutality. So let's get to the meat and 2 veg of this one.
Hey.
Is 2 games a correct ban? I presume it's for each ball.
Oh, God.
I can't take credit for that one. That was all Abby. That was class.
The thing about it is, I think the precedent was set when Stephen McLean got banned for grabbing Kouassi.
Yeah, I remember that.
Did he get banned for that?
He got 2 games as well.
So there is a precedent.
The only thing I would say different about this one, like the Stephen McLean one, it was a dead ball, so he grabbed him by the balls. So there was no action. Whereas this one, it almost looks as if like Christie goes to just normally pull him down by the balls, but then there is also a bit of a grab there as well. Mm-hmm. I actually don't think it's going to affect... Well, it could affect Celtic that he's not playing, but he's an injury doubt anyway. So in terms of the ban, the games he's going to miss,
sure,
he probably won't play anyway. But and I think it's going to be a 3-game ban because he already got sent off once this season. So,
but it's ironic, that injury as well, because it's a groin injury.
Hey,
there you go. A nice end to all of that. Well, not for Christie. I mean, all the fallout's done now, but there was an odd kind of moment earlier this week. And I want to know what your reaction is to when Steven Gerrard was saying, I would love the Scottish League to filter into the English Leagues, all of them, to save and help the Scottish game. This was him speaking to Jamie Carragher, his former Liverpool teammate, on Carragher's podcast, The Greatest Game. He went on to say, can you picture now a Premier League with those 2 clubs, basically Celtic and Rangers? It's just bizarre that he mentions the Scottish League filtering in and then goes immediately to Celtic and Rangers.
I don't think it's bizarre at all. I mean... you got to put it in context. We're looking at it from the Scottish angle, and if you imagine from outside of it, people just don't, especially in England, just don't care.
Do you think it's been...
And the numbers are huge. Like, look, Rangers and Celtic are like 2 of the most supported clubs in Europe, if not the world. Like, they are. I don't want to have to talk about them all the time. But they are the big teams in Scotland. Like, you can't get away from it. And the better they do in Europe, the better it is for everyone else, because it does make the coefficient better. Blah, 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 blah. But I don't think it's bizarre what Gerrard's saying. It makes total sense. And also, you can't pick apart the actual words he's saying. He's not like a poet writing down words, explicitly choosing each one. He's just saying it would... I mean, he goes to games against like Livy and there's 1,000 people turn up to watch it. Hamilton have got a plastic pitch. Like, it's just all this stuff that is not great. And I don't see it as being a totally bad thing, the idea of it merging slightly.
Do you disagree with Derek McInnes then? Because Derek McInnes came out and... kind of defence of Scottish football. He said, I think we have a good level in the league at the minute. I understand Stephen's comments, but I don't particularly agree with them. Rangers and Celtic have a real obligation to make the Scottish League as strong as possible, as we all have. We have to live within our means to do that. Scottish football doesn't need to be saved, but we all have an obligation to make it even better.
The word saved is the wrong word. I think he would take that back if he'd have the choice. I can't speak for Gerrard, but that's probably not the right thing, right?
Not to get my Jimmy hat and my kilt on, crack open a can of Iron Brew, but
I mean, I just wonder why you're wearing them.
It does very much sound like, you know, an English solution to perceived Scottish problems. And as I say, like the
it is their job to save us, isn't it?
What the bit that didn't really make sense from Gerrard, as you say, is that he kind of made that comment. I think it was a sort of throwaway comment. He wasn't really thinking, because he doesn't go into any detail of how that would actually work in terms of how the Scottish leagues would filter into to the English leagues. It's not going to happen. If it was going to happen, it would have happened you know, 20, 30 years ago at the start of the
I know how to do league. It. It could be like the Highland League and the Lowland League, so they have a playoff to get into the into the bottom.
So the Scottish England. Leagues become part of the English pyramid system.
Yeah, and we go back to being subservient to the English.
Oh, God, I date to one. Well, that, oh, I'm not even going to go into it. It's too, it hurts my head.
It's not going to happen. It doesn't matter. This is all
the,
just conjecture.
One thing I would say, the only thing that is that potentially is going to change, it won't be going to the English leagues, is if there's some sort of European League shake-up, how are Celtic and Rangers involved in that? You would imagine they would not go into the sort of first tier of it, but if there was a second tier, then they could go into that. All the discussions I've seen around European leagues is that even if there is a some type of European breakaway or more of a league format than the Champions League, that the domestic leagues will run alongside that, so they wouldn't be leaving Scottish football. And also, sadly for the likes of JJ, if that were to happen, it would just mean Celtic and Rangers would have even more money. Mm-hmm. And even if they concentrated their resources on the European League or whatever comes of that, then their reserve teams would be still be good enough to win.
The thing as well, right, if Rangers and Celtic left the league, I mean, they're not going to, but if they left, and then what would happen?
It wouldn't be their choice. Well, if they had a choice, they would have been gone already.
Well, I mean, whatever the thing is, but like if they went away, it would end up being that Aberdeen probably finished top, and then like right now Motherwell below them, and then you quickly establish like Hearts and Hibs would be in that top four, and then they'd probably pull away from the rest of the team. You might have this similar sort of situation where it's just two teams who always win it again and again. The whole thing, the money's ruined everything. It's ruined the world.
Well, yeah.
That quote from McInnes as well, saying that Rangers and Celtic should want to level the playing field in the league. That's I totally agree with that, because if they are just dominating it and winning it every week, it's just pony, and you can't have that. You want it to be more level. The only way is to have some sort of way in to distribute money equally. If you win the Champions League, if you, even once, the money you earn from that is like the prize money is more than like Aberdeen.
Well, yeah,
get.
It's like 20 million just for qualifying. Yeah. But then it's harder to qualify nowadays. You've seen Celtic.
Yeah, no, it is. But what the one thing I would say that is, you see in the European qualifiers every year, particularly in the Champions League, it's the same teams every year, because I mean, even for example, losing in the playoff round before the group stage of the Champions League is now worth 5 million. So even teams that are getting to that level, a bit less in Scotland, but you know, in a lot of the sort of, you know, Bulgarian leagues, Romanian leagues, when Celtic played against Cluj, for example, the same teams are just getting that money in, which is way more than other teams in the league, so you just get the same champions over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's face it, we've spoken about Celtic and Rangers enough. So enough. Let's move on to the bigger stories away from Glasgow, and let's go to the capital, where hearts are breaking. Yep, Glenn Whelan's gone. Christoph Berra just got married, and then 2 days later, he's pretty much gone, because he's been pretty much forced to train with the reserves. And the strong suggestion is that they're not really done yet. Daniel Stendel says he's looking to lift Hearts from the depths of despair. Sounds like an album title, if I ever heard one, from like Meatloaf or something. Quick thoughts on that, guys? What do you think? Do you think he's doing the right thing? Do you think he's sending the right message? Because the fact is, Christoph Berra is a bit of a legend at the club. I don't mean legend in the
stalwart.
Fact that he's done so much. It's stalwart. You know, he'd been there as a young kid, came through the youth level there, was captain at a young age, I think one of the youngest captains at Hearts at 22, then left, went down to the Championship, got promoted at Wolves, came back to Hearts and done so much for the club, and even he himself has kind of suggested that Daniel Stendel's, you know, been a bit disrespectful towards him.
Yeah, I think the problem isn't so much does he want to move out players like Berra and Whelan, because we spoke about this a bit when Stendel came in at first, that the way he wants to play, this idea of, you know, pressing high, playing with a high back line, which means, you know, you really need pacey defenders, which Berra certainly isn't. Those players maybe don't fit into the style of football he wants to play, so moving them on, nothing wrong with that at all. I think the problem is the way it's been handled, the fact that both players have come out publicly and spoken about it. You've got John Daly, who's a former coach there now as well, who's kind of been sidelined by Stendel, was on the radio the other night.
He said his handling of the club so far has been embarrassing.
So it's not, but then this comes back to the whole structural problem at Hearts. If at the start Stendel was coming in and had his own coaches in place and the previous coaching teams were all moved out, then a lot of these problems wouldn't be happening or something wouldn't be coming out in the public eye. But because they've botched it at almost every stage in terms of sacking Levine but leaving him in and around the club, having such a long time between Levine leaving and then hiring Stendel, not giving Stendel his coaches at the first, as soon as they came in, and the problems just got worse and worse and worse, both on and off the field, because the results have been terrible since Stendel came in as well. You still think, surely with their resources and everything, that they'll be able to, at the very minimum, get themselves off the bottom and into the promotion relegation playoff. But the more these things go on, the bad feeling there is around the club, there's no sign of things turning around. And you think now Stendel, if he's going to get rid of these players, is going to want some of his own players in. But Hearts are continuously just wasting huge amounts of money. So what resources is he going to have?
I mean, it's hard for Stendel to even get his foot in the door properly when the people that he's trying to move are going out publicly and kind of slamming him.
Well, another problem you've got is, it depends what... the word's not culture, but the way the clubs, the squad is set up. So if Berra is captain, right, and really important, then if other players see that he is now getting dinged and isn't, he's vulnerable, he's not safe, that either says that they're like, oh, I've got to buck up my ideas now, or it means that they start to lose faith with the manager because they're treating the person they look up to as expendable. So that's not great. But what it looks like he wants to do is bring players in, like Kieran's saying, to play that style of football, but then that's more like movement in the squad. You can't get any cohesion. And I mean, look at them. They're sitting 5 points off at the bottom. You'd never have thought that at the start. Mm-hmm. One big thing is that, because they bought in that boy, Jorg Sievers. He's coming as the assistant manager now, so at least he's got that. So that means he'll be able to help him with, setting up his training sessions, getting all that done properly.
They work together at Hanover.
And you might see an improvement, because if Stendel wants to put in that style of play, he can't just do it on his own if the coaches don't know how to coach the way he wants to coach. I mean, that, it's kind of simple. And the players will hopefully improve with that. He's got rid of ones like Whelan, who's just slow, can't do what he wants to do. We'll see how it comes along. But it does seem like a bit of a mess. I'd feel bad if I was a Hearts fan, because the team on the pitch tends to represent what is going on at the top of the club, like the chairman. A football manager told me, I can't remember which one it was. But if you
speak
have a,
to so many.
I know. It's so popular. But if the club's in disarray at the top, you see it on the pitch as well, and it's why the best run teams, the rest run clubs, tend to be quite stable and solid and do well.
Well, JJ, you'd feel bad if you were a Hearts fan. Let's hear from an actual fan about all the drama. Amoruso Lets It Run, a Hearts YouTube channel, aka Scott McIntosh, joins us now. So what the f*** is happening at Hearts?
Where do you start, really? Honestly, I don't know. I mean, it's even my moral compass now as a football fan has been so messed up in the last few weeks. Like, I'm basically now just blowing off anything that happens with HR. Like, oh yeah, we can definitely sack people through WhatsApp groups. It's fine. We just basically need to stave off relegation. So anything goes just now, I think, according to most fans.
So, I mean, Stendel's starting to perform a bit of surgery at Hearts. He's removed Christoph Berra, who's now playing for the reserves, I think, and he's got rid of the likes of John Daly. And these are two people who have kind of slammed what he's doing. Is that maybe just a bit of them being disgruntled at the change that they've been forced to make compared to the likes of, you get Craig Halkett coming out and saying he's being a positive energy around the club? There's a lot of contradictory messages coming from Hearts.
Yeah, there definitely does seem to be sort of mixed messages. And as you alluded to there, there is a difference between the likes of Craig Halkett, who has just recently been promoted up to captain, Connor Washington, that's just came back from injury. They've mentioned that they're enjoying the coaching again, which didn't seem to be the narrative from a lot of players when they were, having to do their media duties during the last 6 months. So there definitely does seem to be a difference. I mean, in terms of John Daly, the main perception or rumours amongst sort of Hearts supporters was that John Daly wasn't very, vastly rated by the players, even when Craig Levine was still in charge. So there isn't a huge sort of surprise in the fact that John Daly wasn't happy about being sort of shown the door after one training session. And because the situation we're in just now, being bottom of the league, 5 points adrift going into the winter break, we kind of almost just seem to be saying, well, yeah, getting rid of players by WhatsApp, letting players go that have served the club during two spells with a great degree of distinction. It's not things that you'd want to see happen, generally speaking, but I think we're just trying to give the new manager the reassurance of knowing that, you know, it's fine. Do what you need to do just now to clear the decks and, you know, we will support you. But obviously at the end of the season, if it hasn't worked, naturally some of the decisions that have been taken in the last couple of weeks, we may need to look at again.
You tweeted to say the media narrative has been focusing on, you know, this ruthless streak that Stendhal has been undertaking. But do you kind of feel like you're, and other fans, endearing yourself towards it? Do you think it's the right decisions that he's making? And are you feeling that there's some sort of, can you see the difference that he's made so far on the pitch? Because, you know, he's not won yet.
Yeah, I would say so. I have seen the difference and hasn't always came about in results, but more just individual performances. So Sean Clare is probably the best example. He's someone who was talked about and raved about by the previous management, but they seemed incapable of getting the best out of him. Now, he's actually being played in a position that's very alien to him at right wing back, but he's actually improved in terms of his overall performance. He's wanting the ball. He's now looking for the ball. He just looks like a more assured player. So there is definitely, you know, chinks of light there, but yeah, in terms of the overall, you know, results, that does need to change, and it does need to change quite drastically, to be perfectly honest. But in terms of just going back to the narrative about Stendhal, I fully back his decisions. I suppose it's been how some of those decisions have come about, which is probably what's maybe concerned some certain sections of the support. So again, if you go back to Christoph Berra, I actually understand why you would put someone in the reserves if you've got no plans in playing them in the first team, because there's no point having them about even in first team training if they're not going to influence the match days. But I suppose, you know, if you look at it on an individual basis, and he is our captain, he has served the club well during two spells, it probably wasn't handled the best in terms of, you know, on a PR basis.
Yeah, can Hearts fans sometimes be maybe a bit too sentimental? You know, if anyone's thinking that it's the wrong decision, actually you need to realise that the place that you're in at the moment, it needs things to change quickly, and that you need to get new signings in to play the way that Stendhal wants. And now you've got a new assistant manager to help that kind of happen.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I mean, if you just roll back sort of 5.5 years ago, when Ann Budge and Craig Levein came through the door, within 24 hours, Gary Locke was relieved of his duties. There was other players, you know, let go, like Jamie McDonald, Ryan Stevenson, who again had served the club well. Now, at that time, that was viewed to be a bit of a risky decision to make so quickly. But again, you know, the proof was in the pudding. We got promoted within 12 months, and it was seen to be an overall the best decision for the club. Gary Locke's now back at the club as well. So I think, albeit everyone's maybe a little bit upset by the way it's been handled, I think generally speaking, these decisions have to be made. And one of the reasons, again, why these decisions are being made is because Ann Budge has shown too much blind loyalty to people in the past, like Craig Levein. So we can't be seen to be making these mistakes again, because it isn't going to bode well for the club in 6 months' time.
Scott McIntosh from Amoruso lets it run. Final piece of big news for you is Kilmarnock have appointed Alex Dyer till the end of the season, replacing Angelo Alessio. So far, they've lost all three of their fixtures 1-0 when Dyer was interim. Dyer has coached under Avram Grant, Sam Allardyce, Eddie Gray, Steve Coppell, and of course, the great manager himself, Steve Clark.
He's very good.
He's a very good manager.
He's a very good manager.
Very good. But his only previous experience as manager came during a 5-game stint at English non-league outfit Welling United in 2017. And bear in mind, he's obviously juggling this role with the Scotland international assistant manager's job as well.
That's easy though, that's just doing training sessions, that won't be too much hassle, I would have thought.
You think it's pretty simple?
I would have thought so, yeah. I mean, Steve Clark's doing all the work. I think Dyer would just be in charge of the actual training.
Yeah,
like he'd be doing sessions and planning with Clark on how to do that, and that's just what he's able to do very well. He's really well regarded for that.
I mean, Dyer's came in and he's basically said he's going to go back to what was good before, but he was already part of the setup anyway, so I wonder if he was trying to say that to Alessio in the first place.
And the problem is, like, they want to go back to what they were doing before. You need the players in that he had, that he says he's desperate to get new attackers in. I mean, that's what the record quote is missing. I'm not sure if he actually said desperate at any point. But he wants to bring in new players. They've got a tiny budget. Oh, it's so odd. I mean, it's seems so typical of, I think, Scottish football. This is a bit of a dig, actually, in general, but how...
All right, Stevie Gerrard.
I know, they're getting rid of... So they get rid of Angelo Alessio, right, for all the reasons, and it sounds like it was a right decision to get rid, and they go back to the way it was. We need to go back to the way it was. Stay there, it was safer there. He lost his first three games in charge. It's not an awful lot of difference in the football.
I don't think there was an awful lot of difference in the football from when Alessio was there either. Like
small amounts, like passes per game stuff. Yeah. That's it. Like a slightly higher line.
It wasn't
else.
Like Alessio completely changed the game plan and started playing, you know, 4-3-3 and bombing forward all the time. You know, there was a spell. The spell that Alessio had that was really successful was because they had like five or six games in a row without conceding a goal
in October when he got manager of the month.
So and the three games that Dyer's had, they've lost 1-0 every time. So as JJ says, the problems are pretty obvious. They're still quite solid defensively. They don't concede that many goals, but they don't have either the creativity in midfield or the strikers to put the ball in the net. And unless they address that in January, I don't think stylistically there's an awful lot he's going to change.
Well, yeah, it's Kilmarnock, the joint second worst offence in the Scottish Premiership, and you know, Eamon Brophy, as much as he was prolific for the first half of the season last campaign, he's not had Greg Stewart supporting him this season, and that's a big issue that they have to rectify. In this transfer window, they have to find a striker.
Yeah, and if Dyer is a good coach, it's different to being a good manager, but the problem seems to have been communication before. Now he might be able to give them a straighter like line on what they're meant to be doing so people understand what they're up to. But you look like, for all you can say about, he lost his games and how good he's going to be, I mean, the Motherwell game he lost was a free kick, really good goal, can't do anything about. The game against St Mirren was just the long punt and they didn't defend it very well. It's things that you can get rid of, but they're going to be involved in so many games that just go like 0-0 and they swing off the back of one little mistake. Mm-hmm. And it's players make a difference. It's not like your structure, anything you do with coaching, it's just players doing individual things that change a game. So that's what they need to do.
And Kilmarnock have got Celtic when they come back to action.
Oh dear!
Derby Park. So I'm sure it will get off to a flyer.
I'm Jose Mourinho. I know a thing or two about being special. Football pundits who actually understand management, special. Winning the daily jackpot on Paddy Power games, not special.
Understood, Jose. Yes, someone wins an average £40,000 jackpot every single day. So if you win, don't think you're special. Daily jackpots by Paddy Power Games. Jackpots must be awarded by 11 p.m. and vary from day to day. Jackpot is shared with other operators. Available on selected games. T's and C's at paddypower.com. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker, and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
So the winter break is over, and coming up, it's the Scottish Cup, and the Premiership teams have entered. We're only picking out a few fixtures here, or else we'll be here till Friday. So it's a timely moment to remind you that we've moved to Tuesdays. You're welcome, by the way. So loads of matches happening, but we've gone with four key fixtures. So let's start with Dundee United versus Hibs, guys. Championship runaway leaders versus the middling Premiership side who have struggled for kind of consistency. But I'd like to focus on Dundee United. Is this a big fixture, not just in the fact that it's a cup game, but almost as a kind of measuring stick as to where they want to be next season, because they are bossing it in the Championship?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. I think there's some other ties that with low-end league teams, high-end league teams, that are maybe a bit more romantic in terms of the cup draw, but I think this is the tie of the round. Dundee United, as you say, absolutely smashing it in the Championship. They're coming back up. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And not only should they come back up, they're not going to be one of these teams that comes up and thinks, right, when you think about survival, I think straight away they'll be thinking, can we challenge for the top six? And this will be a very good measuring stick of how they measure up to a team in Hibs who should, I think, in by the end of the season finish in top six. They haven't had the greatest of seasons, but since Jack Ross has come in, they have improved, even if they have struggled a bit for consistency, as you say. So I think I'm really looking forward to this one. It'd be interesting as well to see how Shankland does, because there's all the talk about how great a signing he's been for Dundee United, but why did he not go to a Premiership club, and you know, can he do it against Premiership opposition? So yeah, I think that'd be
you could go in January, you could go this month. Well, there's even rumours that like Celtic were after him, but I think that's made up.
Yeah, yeah, Celtic and Rangers have been linked with him. I don't think that's going to happen. I was speaking to a Dundee United fan, because there's this thing also about how Dundee United have massively overspent comparative to what they bring in this season. Obviously with the idea of doing what they have done in the Championship and absolutely guaranteeing that they come up. But there's a risk obviously attached to that in terms of the finances of the club. And one of the things that he said to me was that the signing of Shankland was part of that. The idea was that they bought Shankland on a free from Ayr but put him on a huge contract with the idea that, you know, hopefully he would do what he has done and that they would sell him on for a decent fee some point down the line. I think what you're saying is right, because they're so far ahead in the Championship they could get away with now selling him and still be confident of going up, but I think it's probably more likely that he stays until the summer.
Yeah, other thing they could do is as well, if they kept him until the summer and then played next season with him in the Premiership, they're probably going to go up, and then suddenly you're going to have loads of English Championship clubs sniffing around and you get far more money. If Aberdeen were to sell Sam Cosgrove, you'd think maybe they'd look at someone like Shankland, but having already left a club, maybe that wouldn't be the answer. I don't think he'd move to somewhere like Harchester now, but it's kind of a weird one.
I think he's certainly proved many doubters wrong, because when he was at Ayr, he was the main man.
Yeah.
And when he moved to Dundee United, it was almost like, can he achieve the same success at a bigger club with that extra pressure?
Yes and no.
But it's still the same level he's playing at, and the Premiership is the key for him. And I think it would probably be good for him to stay and for him to make that decision rather than let any rumours kind of fly around that he might be on the off.
Yeah, that's why I think that even just this game against Hibs, I think it's good to see how he gets on, because as you say, although he moved to a bigger club, he stayed in the same division, so we still don't really know what level he's capable of playing at.
And what about Hibs? Is this probably good for them to just try out something different, even try some new players that they haven't tried yet?
So every single club outside of Rangers and Celtic, this is the only way you can really win something after the League Cup's gone. So they'll all be like trying it. I mean, Jack Ross will be more focused on getting in top six and establishing the team and building that. A cup run's good. Whereas like Aberdeen, I mean, Dermot McGinn's come out and said that he's on a crusade, I think he said, taking swords into this game against Dumbarton to try, because that's the silverware. You've got to deliver silverware, otherwise you're kind of a failure. But Jack Ross is just in the door. It doesn't matter if he got something, it would really help. I mean, you saw the boost Aberdeen got getting to that League Cup final and winning it in 13-14, I think it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 12-13, I can't remember. But that's the kind of thing that you'd want from it.
The shame of it is now that at that stretch that you're talking about when Aberdeen won it, there was when Rangers were down the leagues, there was a really good run of a lot of different teams in Scotland winning a cup. So yeah. Ross County, St Johnstone, Cali, Inverness, yeah. Aberdeen. And that's sort of dried up as when Rangers came back up, Celtic upped their game, and now both of them were so strong. It's not just that someone would have to like shock Celtic a couple of years ago, is what and it happened quite a lot when Rangers were down the leagues. It's now both of them need to go out for someone else to come through. So it does make it really difficult for those teams that are aspiring to win some silverware. But yeah, I think all of your Motherwell, Aberdeen, Hibs, Kilmarnock, Livingston even should be really targeting this competition.
Was it like 2-3 wins and suddenly you're at Hampden? Do you know, it's not too difficult.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, just talking about this game, it's, you know, Hibs aren't the favourites in this, I don't think. Because you look at Dundee United, unbeaten since October, I think it is. It's a fantastic run they're on. And Hibs, as they are under Jack Ross, they're very fragile.
United are basically a Premiership team already.
Yeah, exactly. But listen, we should move on and talk about St Mirren versus Broxburn Athletic. We all know about St Mirren. We talked about them a lot all season. But what about the team who play in the East of Scotland League Premier Division? Fortunately, we have Steve Hislop, manager of Broxburn Athletic, here to tell us all about the underdog side. So, Stephen, tell us about your season so far. How's it been going and how excited are you to be still part of the Scottish Cup?
Yeah, it's been going well. It's going well. You know, this will be our seventh game now in the Scottish Cup, and it's certainly taken the club and the town to a whole new chapter and level. So it's been fantastic for everybody involved. Unfortunately, we've taken an eye off the league a little bit in between cup rounds, but you can't have everything, but we're certainly enjoying where we are at the moment. We're really looking forward to Saturday.
Yeah, sixth in the league, which is that a good place to be at the moment going into the Scottish Cup? You know, thinking as well that you've had your weekend game postponed. You were supposed to play in Linlithgow this weekend, weren't you?
Yeah, that was right. I don't know if that's a blessing in disguise or not, because we've got quite a few injuries. So I would really have liked the game on just to get a really competitive game before St Mirren. But we've obviously been off, as I say, it might have been a blessing in disguise that we've avoided another injury that we certainly don't need ahead of this game. But to be sixth in the league, no, I'm a wee bit disappointed. I think we should probably be a wee bit higher up, as I say. But I think we've taken our eye off the ball a little bit, which I don't blame the players for at all. With the Scottish Cup run that we're having at the moment.
Do you have any plans or special preparation for the game? Are you going to play it a different way to how you normally do? What are you telling the players?
Well, Jim Goodwin's listening. We're going out all out attack, but probably not. So we're going 3-5-2. No, I don't know. We'll be planning sessions. As I say, I'm just on the way to training just now, and that will be an interesting session for the players, because we've done our homework, we've done our due diligence. Brian, the manager, went to watch them three times. I have a contact at Hearts that's gave me information, but I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing with the way Hearts are. I better be careful what I say, because I'm a jumble. But they gave us information, so whatever they've told us, we're doing the exact opposite. And we've done our due diligence, but the biggest problem I think we've got is that St Mirren have just went out and, you know, got a player in from Norwich and a couple in for Cork City, so you know we don't actually know who's going to be playing for them. And I know I've read Jim's reports in the papers, and he's saying all the right things, saying that they'll give us all the respect that we deserve and they'll play a strong team, blah 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 blah. But you know, they've got Rangers on Tuesday, so I can imagine they'll have one eye on that. That might be a wee bit more competitive and a harder game than playing us, but you never know. So, but yes, we will have a formation and plan. I'm not telling you.
Wise, very wise. Look,
I'm coming out of retirement. There you go. Tell Jim Goodwin that.
Well, I can't admit that I've ever seen Broxburn Athletic play, but tell me about the club. What's the support like? Is it going to be a strong support going over to St Mirren Park? Is it going to be the 12th man and all that jazz?
Well, to be honest, they have been fantastic. As the Cups, you know, as we've reached later stages in the Cup, there's definitely been more supporters coming to our games. You know, sometimes you get 200, 300, and again, it all depends on who the opposition is. But, you know, the last few games in the Scottish Cup, when we went up to Aberuri, they took over the town. I'm not going to say they trashed it, but they enjoyed themselves up there.
That's where I went.
I got myself in a wee bit of trouble at the weekend there, because I said, if you're a professional burglar, Broxburn's the place to go on Saturday. We've sold out our allocation of just under 1,700. So it's great. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. I just talked about the 1,700 turn up when we play Crossgates the week after.
And what's it been like for you as a manager being on this run? Because you've beaten some big names, Cowdenbeath, East Stirlingshire, to mention a few. How is it like measuring yourself up against Jim Goodwin as well, who's kind of came through the lower leagues to get into the top level football?
We had the first two games were preliminary rounds, and they were probably the only teams that were lower ranked than us, you know, in terms of all the ties. And then we've got to East Stirling, and I was a wee bit disappointed with the draw, because I thought it was a real tough one. But we did again. People think you just turn up when you're part time. You just turn up to train and play games and don't really do much. But we've done our due diligence in every single team we've played, and we've worked out their weaknesses, and it's worked, you know. And we've played East Stirling and beat them. The Cowdenbeath one was just incredible. Mm. I mean, we equalised with a minute to go, but even Gary Bowen said it would be an injustice if we had taken something out of the game. And then they came to our park and we steamrolled them 3-0 and missed a penalty. And then Baruri Locos, again, you could say in the grand scheme of things, they're a higher team than us in the tiers of Scottish football. And we rode our luck. I will be honest. We rode our luck in the first half, and then we became stronger. And you know, we got the winner. And where we are, you know, we deserve to be where we are, in my opinion. But this is going to be a real tough one.
you talk about being part-time. How much contact do you have with the players of week to week? Is it one session, two sessions, more than that? And
we've got two sessions, yeah. We train, we normally train a Tuesday and Thursday, but we're getting our pitch relayed, so I change it to Monday, Wednesday, which I'm not really a fan of. It's too long for me to wait for a Wednesday to a Saturday. But no, we work a lot. As I say, a lot of people sometimes think with part-time football, you just turn up and maybe do a bit of running and then just play games. A wee bit more structured than that, And the players have taken it on board. And, you know, I've got to do my homework too as well. I pretend I'm at work sometimes, but I'm watching teams on my computer. And planning sessions, but tonight's will be everything. You know, in the last two weeks of training sessions, I've been a wee bit of disguised, you know, training sessions heading towards St Mirren, albeit we've tried to tell the players we're not playing St Mirren this week, we're playing, I don't know, Lithgow Rose, or the week before it was Blackburn, but I was a wee bit sneaky. My training sessions were planned a wee bit towards St Mirren for this week, and how we're going to play and how to address certain situations which might arise in the game.
Steve Hislop there, manager of Broxburn Athletic. Let's move on. East Kilbride versus BSC Glasgow. Definitely the romantic tie of the round, both from the Lowland League. BSC are fourth and East Kilbride are eighth, so the away team come into this probably as the favourites, you'd think.
Yeah, it's a strange one because obviously East Kilbride came so close to going up last season.
Yes.
They played Cove in the final.
Yeah.
Like they won the Lowland League, and then obviously there's a playoff between the Lowland League and the Highland League winners. But yeah, they're like 20 points off the top of the Lowland League this season. And BSC Glasgow are kind of a very recently formed team. I'd say I didn't know that much about them until like this Scottish Cup run. But even though from Glasgow, they play their home games in Alloa. So, it's a strange one. But yeah, I think it'd be great for obviously whoever wins this tie. It's guaranteed to having a non-league team in the next round of the cup.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I mean, I think East Kilbride are under an interim manager as well, Jim Patterson. So I think they've had a bit of a rocky season so far.
I always think the most romantic games in these rounds of the cup is when the smaller teams go up to like Premiership stadiums, because that must be fun for the players.
Like when you had Auchinlech Talbot last season go to Tynecastle. Yeah.
Or when you have cameras at Auchinlech Talbot and it looks just funny.
Ropey.
Yeah. It looks like you can see like...
It's because there's no like proper gantries or proper stands. I mean, it's nice stands, but it's so low level that, yeah, you can't... I mean, I don't know how these teams do analysis, because you need like a high angle to even see how a formation is. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's quite fun.
And finally, it's Bonnyrigg Road versus Clyde, the real romantic tie, because it's the Bonnie and Clyde tie.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
I couldn't help
We're
it.
We're back, baby!
The music kind of led me to it. But anyway, just two teams, one from the Lowlands and one from League One, looking to fight it out with each other to progress through to the next round and provide a spectacle for the fans. Ah, Bonnie and Clyde. Whatever happened to them, eh?
They both got shot. To death.
I introduced you as enthusiastic, and you just brought so much death to this.
I'm just delivering punchlines.
Very good. That's all we really wanted to say on that. Any other matches you guys are keen on?
Aberdeen Dumbarton is going to be a good one.
Yeah,
I like those sorts of games where the smaller team goes to Aberdeen and inevitably wins.
I thought you were just going to say I like those ones because Aberdeen are involved.
No, I mean the game on the Friday, Stranraer Rangers, well Rangers Stranraer, I should say, that's a huge game for them going to Ibrox. That'll be a good laugh for all the lads.
As an Airdrieonian, I have to say Airdrie going to Hearts.
Okay,
has probably got the best potential upset.
Absolutely. Can you imagine if Hearts lose? Can you imagine how like? off the fans would be if Hearts lose that. It'd be amazing.
And Airdrie have been going, I mean, we talked to them in one of the shows earlier this season, they've been going very well.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's potential there.
Time now for the latest odds with our man Lee Price at Paddy Power. Lee, give us the odds on Rangers winning the league, please.
Well, tight, very tight. In fact, Rangers are the shortest price they've been for the best part of a decade. They're 11-10 to win the Scottish Premiership this season. Celtic, though, do remain odds on. They're 4-6. We still think they're going to carry on their running streak. but Rangers attracting a lot of attention from the punters.
And for Hearts to finish bottom in the Premiership?
Interesting. We've been deniers for a long time, but it sounds like we've belatedly come round to admitting that Hearts are involved in the relegation battle because they're third favourites to finish bottom at 12-5. Hamilton are our favourites to finish bottom. They're 11-5 ahead of St Mirren at 9-4. Beyond those three teams, no one else really in contention. Next best price is around 10-1. It's a three-horse race for those bottom two spots.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven and JJ Bull.
You know how you've always wanted to see JJ's lovely mug in the flesh? Well, the good news is you can, because we're actually coming home. It's going to be great. That's right, in March we'll be taking the low road and be in Scotland for our first ever live shows. We'll be at the Glee Club in Glasgow on Tuesday the 24th of March, followed by the Lemon Tree in Aberdeen on Wednesday the 25th of March. If you want puns and punditry, stats and sarcasm, all the stuff too risky for the regular show, then get yourself some tickets now. To be with us at Glasgow, just go to glee.co.uk/performer/the-totally-scottish-football-show.
And if just Google it.
And if you can't handle that, just Google the Totally Scottish Football Show, live Aberdeen or Glasgow, depending on where you want to go.
That's part of the Glasgow Comedy Fest as well.
Yeah, exactly. So that's us live in person in Scotland. You won't want to miss it. Before we end the show, time for some transfer chat.
Yeah.
Who's looking good so far?
Well, I mean, the big one, surely, is Dylan McGeoch's return to Scottish football.
He's back at Aberdeen.
Yep.
Is that a good sign? Are you happy with that, Gigi?
I think so. I just don't... Like, Kieran said something to me earlier, and I think he might be dead right. It's like, he was really good at Hibs, but was that because he was playing next to John McGinn?
That was at a time when a lot of Hibs fans felt that they had one of the best midfields in the country, really, when it was McGinn, McGeoch, and I think Bartley as well.
Well, I mean, Aberdeen have needed someone in midfield. So Funso Ojo's come in, been injured. It looks like Brewster is just buggered.
And you've got that guy from Atlanta.
Atlanta United, yeah, in America.
Gallagher, wasn't it?
Yeah, John Gallagher. He's back. He's extended his loan to the end of the season.
Just to say on McGeoch, I do actually think he's the type of player that Aberdeen needs, because when he was at Hibs, McGinn's more than this, but McGinn was very much the energy box-to-box kind of player, and McGeoch's much more of a ball player, quite creative. Certainly the type of player I don't think Aberdeen have got at the moment, and certainly, like, especially listening to JJ, the type of player they need in the way that they've played this season.
Aye.
Just the MLS made me think of another sort of slightly strange signing that's happened, or is going to go through, Lewis Morgan to Inter Miami.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
which is... bit of a strange one, but...
That's David Beckham's team, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. The new team, so they have not played a game, but...
What a move. The other one is Fraser Ayer, I think he's at Cove, right? He's apparently on his way to San Francisco. That's a good move.
Yeah, I would take that, to be fair.
Yeah.
I would definitely take that
Come on.
Well, you've already got quite a few Scottish players out there, haven't you?
Gary Mackay-Steven.
Yeah, Gary Mackay-Steven's out in the States as well.
He was back visiting Aberdeen last week, apparently.
And Ronnie Dial is the new manager of New York City as well.
Yeah, the former Celtic manager is now in the MLS.
I should point out, when I said Brewster's buggered, I meant Bryson. I'm just saying weird things today.
There's also a little bit of a tug of war between Matty Kennedy, the St Johnston winger. I think it's definitely between Aberdeen are interested.
Aberdeen are really keen. Aberdeen have offered a contract. Hearts might be in it as well. But I wonder whether that is actually that his agent is trying to get a better deal from him from Aberdeen, which is probably where he'll end up going.
Yeah.
It could be that.
That would be a good signing. I really rate Matty Kennedy. He's good enough to play for either of those teams, if not higher. Because I even remember him when he was at Cardiff City. And Neil Warnock was a big fan of his. I don't know if that says much to me.
Yeah, thing about Kennedy, Tommy Wright said yesterday, when he was sort of admitting that Hearts are now in contact as well, is that he is very keen from, because he's out of contract at the end of the season, that's why. So Aberdeen have offered him a contract for next season. Mm-hmm. But he's very keen that he stays at St Johnstone at least to the end of the season, because mm-hmm. just to basically make sure that they stay up.
I mean, that makes total sense, because Aberdeen might end up losing someone like Ryan Hedges in the summer or something like that if he does better in the second half of the season. Aberdeen probably get bids for McKenna and Cosgrove, I'd have thought, in this window. Another one I've heard is that Stephen Donnell, his contract's up in the summer.
Mm.
So, been strong links with him signing a pre-contract at Aberdeen as well. I don't know how true that is. But
do you know who's been busy? St Mirren have been pretty busy.
Yeah, they need to be.
Yeah, they do. Although probably the standout signing as a defender, probably a standout signing they should have got, is probably in the forward areas. But Akin Famewo is the standout for me, really, on loan from Norwich. Had a lot of first-team football at Luton Town.
You watched him play?
I haven't seen him play, but I've read quite a lot of reports, and a friend of mine is a Norwich fan who kind of keeps up with the track with the youths. I mean, he's been captaining the under-23s. He's been on the bench quite a lot, and he's just signed a new three-year contract at Norwich. So he's kind of top. He's tipped for big things there, but obviously it's very difficult to break into that side, even though there are defensive injuries. So I think St Mirren could be pretty happy to have him. He's quite a big lad, 6'2". And he's a defender, and they're pretty good in defence at the moment already. But
I mean, the thing is, just they got new players doesn't mean they're any good. This is the thing. People think new signings are so exciting. It's like winning a game. It's become transfer signings. I think because of FIFA and stuff like that, it's just become this thing where like you win a trophy when you buy a big player. But a lot of things have to go right for it to work.
Jim Goodwin's came out and said he doesn't trust coaches. He trusts players that he knows, and it was Kenny McLean who actually he spoke to, the former Aberdeen player who's playing for Norwich at the moment. He asked him what he thought, and he gave him glowing reports. So is there any other ones you want to pick out? I mean, I know there's a few dealings going on with Celtic. There's the likes of Patrick Klimala, who seems like he's joining Celtic. It might even be done while we're recording this show.
He's coming from Poland.
Scott Sinclair is gone. There's this guy, Ismelia Soro, who might be joining Celtic. I mean, this is... Neil Lennon seems to have this friendship with this agent, Dudu Dahan, who is a football agent who deals with a lot of Israeli players, or players who are playing in the Israeli league. So the likes of Nir Beaton and...
El Hamed.
And actually...
Effie Ambrose.
Effie Ambrose as well. And the other one as well, Marciano, the goalkeeper for Hibernian. He actually went to Hibs when Lennon was manager as well, so he's using those contacts. But again...
The big killing you do some work, because Osman So's loan has finished. He's back at Dundee United. Simeon Jackson, I think, has been released.
Simeon Jackson. Woo.
Also, jeez, what's happening? And Liam Miller as well, who they had from Liverpool. His loan's finished as well.
Yeah.
So they were already short players, need to get really busy. They've only got like 2 weeks left to bring in so much that they need. And then Hearts are going to be busy as well. And it's not a huge market for all these clubs to go for.
I mean, I think with the Scottish clubs in particular, because they don't have the greatest amount of money, you do see much more business towards the end of the last few days, when particularly with loans and stuff from English clubs where players maybe looking for a different move and then, you know, the last minute have to take a loan coming up to Scotland. So, I mean, it will get a lot busier in the final week of the window.
Just quickly, who do you think's has the busiest work to do in this transfer window? Who needs to do it most?
Killian Hearts, but Hearts is really complicated, whereas Killian's quite simple. You just need to identify decent players and get them in.
Yeah, and the thing with Killian as well, I mean, they're not going to go down, so yes, to have a much better end to the season, they need to get a striker in, but it's not the sort of panic stations where it is with Hearts.
This is when we cut to April and go, Kilmarnock are relegated! Well, that's it for this week's show. Thank you to JJ, thanks to Kieran, and thanks to Abby for our debut show. And finally, also thanks to Little Kicks for our cool theme tune. We'll be back next Tuesday, ready to review the Scottish Cup. I don't know, I said that kind of like American. Scottish Cup. From all of us here on the Totally Scottish Football Show, we'll see you next Tuesday.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football Network, at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello there, football fan. My name's Lindsay Hooper, and I'm here to tell you about another podcast that just might catch your interest. It's called The Offside Rule WSL Edition, and every week it's me and Kate Borsay talking to a load of former and current footballers, plus those in the know, talk about what's going on in the world of women's football. So if you love your football and want something a little different, then give us a try. It's The Offside Rule WSL Edition, available right now wherever you're listening to this podcast. The Offside Rule WSL Edition, because women's football is for life, not just for every World Cup.
Muddy Knees Media.